What did you think when you first saw the tweet storm on the weekend from Robin Leonard?
You know, Robin had actually reached out to me that morning, and he asked me, why are more people not talking about Jack and his situation, speaking about Jack Eichel? And he was really upset by it. And, you know, I think, you know, he was asked about it in the Spin Chicklets interview a couple of days earlier. And I think as he had time to think about it, he started to think that this was really messed up. And he started to think about things in the league that really upset him. And, you know, Robin, as long as I've known him, and I knew him since his days in Chicago, is when we really got to know each other, has always been someone with conviction. He's always someone who believes in what's right and what's wrong. And he's not afraid to toe some lines that in hockey culture, frankly, a lot of his peers aren't supposed to toe. So when I saw those tweets, my first thought was, this is someone who now has gotten to the point of desperation where he needs attention because whatever channels he's going through behind the scenes just haven't been working. And, you know, one of the reasons that Rob and I have talked in the last couple of days is because he wanted more players to get on board, to speak out. And quite frankly, none of them have. Robin's been alone on an island.
Yeah, there is that element of Robin Leonard. Like, he's not shy about putting himself out there. When there's an issue, he'll attach himself to it. There's an element of, you know, it's almost like, you know, the wedding guest in Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. Like, you know, I have to unburden myself of the story and go and tell everybody, like, what's just happened. Like, there's, like, when he firmly believes in something, he's not shy of attaching himself to it and making it public. Like, even going back to, like, I first saw Robin Leonard play in junior hockey when he played for the Sioux Greyhounds. And, you know, there's one story about, you know, he thought that he was getting ripped off on the shot clock, that, you know, that wasn't 12 shots I faced that period. It was really 16. And there was one, you know, there's one story where, you know, at the end of a period in defiance, you know, he skated to center ice and stared at the shot clock as the Zamboni had to flood the ice around him to bring attention to the fact that the shot clock was wrong. Like, here's someone that has, like, really strong, as you know, Emily, really strong emotional reactions to things that he doesn't feel are right. And no matter how he goes about it, the one thing that I'll always say about Robin Leonard is I feel that his heart is always in the right place, regardless of the avenues he takes to express his points or how he gets there. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think his intentions are so pure here, although his messaging, I think, is a little messy. And, you know, what he did in putting this on Twitter in what was really a furious tweet storm that was a little confusing to follow. He had to clarify later what exactly he was accusing Alain Vigneault of, you know, putting in a thread. English, again, is not his first language. I think that's also an important factor to bring up. You know, a lot of people are saying, what's going on? This isn't the best way to enact action. But he got people to listen that were really important in the NHL and NHLPA, and he got an audience in meetings with them over the last couple of days. And I think now Robin is realizing that there's a reason that current players don't speak up. It's because, and they don't speak up in this way, it's because that's not what the league reacts to. He knows that the former players who have come after the league often do it yielding a knife. And you think of, like, the Dan Carcillos of the world who kind of come guns a-blazing, and the NHL doesn't respond to that either. He realizes what the NHL does respond to is people who work with them in tandem, who do it quietly, not publicly. And he's saying, okay, as we begin the season, because I have this audience, I'm going to trust them, and we're going to talk behind the scenes now, and I'm going to try to push forward because I'm confident that they're actually listening to me. But if in a couple of weeks things aren't going the way that they said they're going to go, I'm going to go back to doing things my way.
What did you think, and I agree with you on that completely, what did you think when Robin yesterday started talking about, you know, this weekend was a cry for help? Because normally someone that's gone through everything that Robin Leonard has gone through in his personal and private life, which he has chosen to very much make public for the benefit of everybody around him, and it has to extract an emotional toll from him. But what did you make when he started talking about how this was a cry for help on the weekend on Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it was. If you read the tweets again, they're passionate. They might be a little incoherent at times, but there's somebody who's out there pretty much begging, listen to me, like, listen to what I'm saying. And I think it's so raw and so real for someone to actually say, yeah, that is exactly what I was feeling. And that is why I put it out there. And that is the emotional state I was in, because most guys aren't comfortable saying that. And, you know, I alluded to, Robin asked me, you know, find other guys to come speak out. And I've talked to a handful of former players that played for the Buffalo Sabres, current players in the league. And, you know, some of them have said, I've seen some messed up things in this league. I agree so much with Robin saying I have strong opinions about it, but it's not my place to speak up. And that's just the difference between Robin Lehner and the average NHL player, where he doesn't necessarily need to go through those proper channels.
That's a great point, Emily, because one of the things that we know about Robin Lehner is he's not shy about articulating publicly what players are talking about privately, almost as if he is the public advocate for the players. I sort of put out there in a cheeky tweet on Saturday, he's his own players association. Like that's Saturday, Emily, that's what it felt like to me. It felt like this is the Robin Lehner players association. He's taking players' conversations, players' issues, players' challenges, and making them public to draw attention to them. I don't know where that comes from with him, but I gotta say, like, it's admirable, because I don't know many people that would choose to do this, specifically in this sport where, and Robin did talk about not wanting to be a distraction, but I find that that term itself, I don't want to be a distraction, has really damaged the game. I think that it's disallowed people to be themselves. I think it's kept certain players. Like, listen, I think it's kept players in the closet, you know, not being able to really feel who they are. Oh, I don't want to be a distraction. I don't want to color outside the lines at all. I think that Robin Lehner is one of those people that's necessary in the game, because he will articulate, even though he's talking about keeping it private now and dealing with the NHL. He'll articulate what players are feeling. And I mean, listen, you've talked to plenty of players, you know, on the record and off the record. What they tell you off the record is much different than the answer they give you when you have a microphone and a camera in front of their face.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you said that players don't want to be a distraction and that, you know, suppresses them and they're struggling in that way, it's also just held them back in ways like career earnings. I know so many guys that have turned down endorsement deals because they're like, well, I don't know what my GM would think. I would get sharped in the room. I don't want to put myself above the team. And that sounds so twisted. It's like, this is a small window of opportunity. You have to maximize your value, do whatever you need to do. But hockey culture really trumps all. And it's going to take a really long time for that overall tidal wave to shift. And when it comes to Robin, I think this is all just colored by his personal experiences. He's been told what to do his entire career, and sometimes he thinks that's detrimental to his health. And the perfect example of that is when he did go to rehab, when he came back with the New York Islanders. The Islanders doctors are like, okay, well, like, just don't tell your teammates, we'll administer your medication, all of this can be, you know, under the table and it's fine. And Robin's like, no, I want to be open about it. I want to have my meds in my locker and I want to talk about them because this is something that I deal with. And he found it so instructive for him to be open about it. And I think those type of experiences that he's had in his career shape who he is today, and why he has conviction and why he wants to act on everything he believes in.
You know, one of the interesting discussions that this winks at as well, and Elliot and I talked a little bit about this on the podcast this weekend, didn't really get it in too deep, but I want to get your thoughts on this. In a game like hockey, as distasteful as this may sound, as a fan of the game, you have to accept concussions. Concussions are going to be part of the sport. Now, we try to minimize the risk. We try to keep players as safe as possible. But when you have a confined space with boards, large bodies moving at the speeds that they are moving at and allowing contact, there will be concussions. It will happen. That is something you accept in the game. Given the nature of 82 games a season, you know, sometimes 4 games a week, plus practices, plus travel, hotels, all of it, being away from your family. Is there a certain level of understanding we have to have towards the players vis-a-vis pain medication, sleep aids? Because, like, listen, you talk to any of the guys that go through it for the first time, getting through 82 games is hard. It's hard physically. It's hard mentally. One of the things that I've always felt is really distasteful is the shaming of athletes who would choose to use pain medication, who would choose to use sleeping pills to help, you know, to help get them through the day. Do you think that given the nature of the sport of hockey, there has to be somewhat of an acceptance that players will need to use things like this?
Absolutely. And I'm with you. I think we would be naive to think that these things aren't present or shouldn't be present, you know, in the league. And listen to me right now. I am a little nasally. It's because I just did a trip from Tampa to Seattle to Connecticut. And that's like a Tuesday to Thursday for regular NHL player, plus, you know, putting on actual games.
Yeah.
That said, I think Robin's main point here is about education. And yes, there are these pills that are available and readily available for players. But how much are they just being slipped into guys' hands, or how much are they saying, hey, by the way, just so you know about benzos and Ambien, there's a high propensity for you to get addicted. These are the potential side effects later in life. Just so you know, if you do take it, this is what the potential ramifications can be. And I don't think those conversations are happening. It's kind of just very casual, very like, hey, this is available, this helps you. And I think what Robin is hoping for is a bit more of a conversation, a bit more education around it, and maybe some conversations about what alternatives are available too. You know, this is a league that has addressed medical marijuana and marijuana for, you know, benefits that can affect your play. Maybe those are things that we start talking about and introducing to players as well. So I think that's more where we're coming at from it is, yes, it's ubiquitous. Yes, they're going to exist. Let's just make sure that especially the young guys in the league know what they're getting into, and they're not just saying yes because it's a cultural thing. Oh, this is what the older players do. Oh, this is what people did before me. Yes, of course, I'll just pop a pill and we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. Makes total sense. You write about so many interesting things. I thought that your piece on dress codes in the NHL was particularly fascinating, and, you know, PA pushing for change, players certainly pushing for change, and I'll circle Austin Matthews as being front and center. We hear a lot about, you know, sports leagues, specifically for the purposes of this conversation, the NHL, wanting to allow players to express themselves. I know it scares some general managers. I'm sure at times that scares the commissioner, to say nothing of the executive director of the Players Association, Donald Fehr. But do you think we're at a point now where whether teams, whether the league likes it or not, the new athlete in this game wants to express themselves. They want to express themselves with how they speak, the forum in which they do it, and they want to express themselves with what they wear to the rink, knowing there's going to be a camera on them from the bus to the dressing room.
Yeah, it's just kind of like the core identity issue that the NHL faces on a daily basis, where it's such a sport predicated on team and the collective we, and they don't necessarily honor individualism. At the same time, the mantra for the league forever, as long as I've covered it, probably as long as you've covered it, probably as long as anyone's covered it, has been grow the game. And if you want to grow the game, what we see is successful in other sports is letting individual athletes flourish and build their own individual brands. And so that's like a huge culture clash that I do think is starting to come to a head with this younger generation of players. I think there's going to be some bend, you know, and maybe not necessarily break, but you're going to see the younger players start to have a voice, start to feel more comfortable exercising that voice. And their general managers realizing, hey, if we let a guy wear like a funky sweater and some jeans to the game, he's probably going to perform the same way he did if we make him wear a suit. What's the big difference?
Yeah, to say nothing about, like, we all, you know, sort of, you know, giggle a little bit at Lou Lamoriello with, you know, shave that beard, son. Beards are just for playoffs, and you better get a haircut, and that, you know, varsity club kind of stuff. Like that's all leaving the game. Like, it's completely leaving the game. And I'll tell you what, more so for non-traditional, like, athletes that come from non-traditional backgrounds that are entering the game. Like, this idea that, man, you've seen it, Emily. We all have, you know, the kids that get off the bus and they're all wearing the same, you know, golf shirt and all wearing the same khakis. And it's like, what this is? And they all say the same thing, and they look terrified to speak out of turn. And they always look at their, you know, their media handler before they answer any question, because they're terrified of, you know, saying anything that might overstep what is the accepted conversation. I just think that, to your point, if we're going to create an environment to allow different types of athletes and different types of voices, I think something as simple as, like, you know, easing up the dress code can really go a long way.
Totally. And, you know, the one team that is fully relaxed for the season, they began it last season, is the Arizona Coyotes. And I've seen people say, well, of course it's the Coyotes. They'll do anything for publicity. They're so irrelevant. And I'm like, well, isn't that the point? Like, aren't we trying to draw eyeballs to the sport? And yeah, maybe, you know, Serge Ibaka's sweater, scarf, whatever ridiculous thing he wore became an entire news cycle. What if that happens to the hockey player? Then all of a sudden you want to tune into that hockey player's game, and then you realize, holy cow, he's really good at hockey. I like following him. that's a new viewer. Yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. And I think the old school mindset where we need to conform and conformity is the only option, it slowly will erode, but it's going to take some time because, as we know about this league, you know, there's just a lot of voices that have been in this game for a while, and it's not a lot of fresh outside perspective.
I always wonder where it all comes from. Like, I just ultimately think it's a power thing. It's, you know, coach over player. It's manager over
control.
Player.
It's team control.
Over player. That's completely how I look at it. And again, it goes back to our conversation about don't be a distraction. Players are so terrified. Like, it comes up in every interview. Oh, I don't want to be a distraction. Oh, this guy is a distraction. Oh, you know, this guy had a camera crew following him to the rink. Oh, it's such a distraction. Like, if your athletes are that fragile or your organization is that fragile that you would lean on that as an excuse for not performing well, then I don't think your problem is with the choice of shirt or shoes that player is wearing. You know, one of the big stories today, Emily, just sort of bounce around topics in the NHL, is the situation involving Jack Eichel and the two distinct surgeries that we're all familiar with, the spinal fusion or the disc replacement. Those stories have all been well told. It seems as if we're at a place right now where, I was just talking to Elliot about this in hour one, he needs to have this surgery. Like, this just can't sit there anymore. He needs to have something done to that neck ASAP. Does it feel like we're at the breaking point now, where something is going to finally get done here between Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres? The other factor is, of course, that Buffalo needs to start paying him next week.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to say we're at the breaking point because this has just festered on for so long. And, you know, that's really Robin's biggest issue here is how has this festered for so long? I don't understand why this hasn't come to an end. You know, we're at the point now, though, where this player, like you said, he needs the surgery physically. We're at the point where he's risking playing games this season. He's supposed to be a focal point for Team USA in the Olympics. As of now, I can't imagine Team USA feels great about penciling or penning him into their plans, knowing his medical situation. So something does need to budge. The fact that medicals are being passed around to other teams at this point because he can go independently get them, that's such a positive development. The market is definitely thin for him from what it was this summer. A lot of teams have figured out, you know, and addressed that center position or maybe not don't feel comfortable giving up the assets. But I do think something will happen. I feel so hesitant telling you when because it's gone on for so long.